Welcome to the discussion of abortion and Jewish law. First of all, I must say that the question of abortion and Jewish perspectives on abortion, of course, there are many perspectives on Jewish perspectives on abortion. We need to remind ourselves that it's a very personal issue. Many people, have been in circumstances where they went abortions, and certainly every case must be considered very separately. In fact, there were some rabbis who were so sensitive to the feelings of particular women who were considering abortions that they said, look, when they reached a certain age, they couldn't decide these questions anymore because they couldn't tell the real anguish and angst of a young woman having a child and what it would mean to her if she had this particular child versus not having a child. So the question of who can have an abortion, who doesn't, is a very personal question. And it's a question that is very unique to every individual case. That's why an expert should be consulted for every case. However, I'd like to give a good overview of Jewish thought and halacha on abortion so that we can have a better perspective as the debates rage in the United States at this time about abortion. I want to remind everyone that the debate in America is so simplistic. Pro, anti. We have two-party system, so it lends itself to these simplistic oversimplifications where we say, are we for it or against it? Obviously, Jewish law always has a lot to offer in terms of the gray areas. I see that today sometimes a state will say we allow abortion under circumstance X, Y, and Z, but not under different circumstance. And even that, people criticize. And I think those types of middle ground solutions could be helpful in this debate. But in any event, let's take a look at the Jewish perspective. One might say that this question has to do with when life begins, although even if you say that life does not begin at birth, one could still say or that it is a life, that it does begin at conception, but you could still say it's not the same qualitatively, quantitatively, as a person who's actually born. It's also important to note that this question of when does life begin is not simply a medical question. It's not something you can look at the cells and say, oh, life has begun. You could make a scientific definition if you want to, but truth is, the question of what's alive, what's not alive is really a metaphysical question. And in some ways, the medical profession has taken upon themselves the notion that they are going to determine when the beginning and end of life is, where actually it's a theological question. It's a metaphysical question. You could look at a video all day of a fetus, it looks alive and it seems alive, and that may have very little to do with the metaphysical question of what is life and where does it begin. All right, so let's take a look. Now, in the Torah, we actually have two places where it actually kind of refers to abortion. One is very clear as to what the position is on fetuses, and the other is a midrash interpretation. It's very clear to the midrash, but it's a debatable point as to whether what it's actually talking about. First source number one, Exodus 21:22, Parshat Mishpatim, 22 verses into it. It says that if chinatzu anashim, two people are fighting, nagafu yishara, and they sort of gore or they hurt a pregnant woman, and her children come out. Interesting, he calls them children rather than fetuses. But there's no great tragedy, no tragic death follows. What do you mean no tragic death follows? Her children came out, the babies came out. So there was a tragic death. No. Rashi says there was no tragic death in the Isha. There was no tragic death to the woman. So in other words, the death of the children is not considered tragic death. Rather, anoshi anish, they should be punished for causing the miscarriage. And kasher shila vali shav, it seems to say that whatever the husband says it costs, but actually natan riflin, the judges decide how much does this fellow owe this couple for the fact that he made the miscarriage. Good. So how does the Torah view it? Not as a life. It was a life. You can't pay for a life. Rather, it views it as a monetary question. It's part of the property of the woman together with her husband that this is their child, their property, and it's not viewed as a life because there's no death penalty for it, and it's not considered an ason, a tragic death. However, the source 2 from Sanhedrin quotes from Parshat Noach, chapter 9 in Genesis, verse 6, Shofech dam adam, but ba'adam damo yishofech. Someone who spills the blood of a person in a person. Person in a person? Actually, it says the blood of a person in a person. But if you just take those words, a person in a person, who is a person in a person? That's the fetus. And if anyone does that, their blood shall be spilled. In other words, get the death penalty for taking the life of a person in a person, a fetus. Now, the rabbis, in the context there in Sanhedrin, is about Gentiles. Gentiles are obligated in the laws of Noah. Seven laws of Noah. One of them is cannot kill. In other words, Torah says we don't require Gentiles to do all kinds of prayers and all kinds of rituals. No, just be very careful about murder. So how careful? Even fetuses should not be killed. If they are, it's punishable by death. It's just a conceptual idea. I don't know how many times Jews actually executed a Gentile for violating the laws of Noah. They didn't even execute their own people for too much. The death penalty was rarely used. But in theory, it's a very severe crime for a Gentile, according to this interpretation. It's not agreed to by all. Most people say this is the halacha, that for a Gentile, it is forbidden, and it is a form of murder, which is prohibited, punishable by death. So if we stopped here, we would say that the Jewish position on people in Iceland, that the country of Iceland, since it barely has any Jews, Iceland should not do any abortions at all, under no circumstance. That's what it sounds like if you stop here. But don't turn off the video. Now, let's continue. So far we saw regarding a Jew, a Gentile. What about a Jew? Well, we have a rule. Martin Sanhedrin 59a says, Leka midim de l'Yisrael shar l'vod g'chav masim. There's nothing that's permitted for a Jew and forbidden for Gentiles. Even if God gave us the Torah, he added more restrictions, more obligations to the Jew, more than the Gentile. So you can't say a Gentile is forbidden in something, and a Jew can do it, no problem. That's not tenable. But then we have a problem. Is that true? So a Jew can't do abortion either? Wait a second. And do we mean that a Gentile can never do an abortion? So let's look in source number 4, Erechin 7a. It's a Mishnah, the early source in the Talmud. A woman is being executed. Again, Jews rarely used execution, even in the days prior to the destruction of the Second Temple, First Temple. But occasionally there was death penalty. And in case there was, what's the rule? Let's say a woman's going out to be executed, but she is pregnant. So you should say, well, we should wait for the, give her clemency until the baby is born and then let her be executed. So you say, Imam Tinalaj Taylor, you don't wait until she's born. So what do you do? However, let's say if she's ready in labor, then you go through the labor and then you have the execution. So what happens? Should you execute her while she's pregnant? Well, just picture it. What would happen? Let's say she was stoned, she was, whatever happened, various types of death penalties. She might likely miscarry and bleed in front of everybody. It would be very embarrassing. So Talmud says, nah, knock out the baby before, destroy the baby before the execution. The mother's going to be executed anyway. Do an abortion on the baby, and then the mother will not be disgraced, even though this woman is being executed anyway. She shouldn't be disgraced more than that. She's death penalty is death penalty, but she doesn't have to have a miscarriage in front of the whole world. So they actually would remove the baby, would do an abortion of the baby before the execution. Why? To avoid the humiliation of this woman. So, just simply to avoid humiliation, allowed to destroy a baby. But for a Gentile, it's you get killed for destroying a baby. Furthermore, Mishnah Naolos, and the laws of purity and impurity. A woman's having trouble giving birth, very difficult pregnancy, very difficult labor. It's a danger for the woman's life. So what do? Go inside and you chop up the baby and take out the baby limb by limb. Excuse the graphic description. Why? Her life comes first. Why does her life come first? Well, she's already has shown that she's a viable human being. Baby might not be viable. So her life comes first. However, Yatsarubo, if most of his body came out, Einoginbo, Chindoki Nefesh for Nefesh, if most of his body is already out in this world, in the air, then we say it's a viable baby, it's a real baby, it's a real person. You can't kill one person to save another person. The Rambam, in his commentary on this Mishnah, says something that usually I wouldn't quote, but here we will, because Rabbi Asher Weiss thinks it's very significant. Zekulo Pashut in Tzarech Bir. He says, this is all completely obvious. You don't need to explain it. Why does he think it's obvious? Because if the baby is, because Rashi explains why. Rambam didn't read Rashi, but he probably thinks like Rashi. Rashi says, "Kol zman shelo yotzei bir olam," as long as the baby has not come out into the air of the world, lav nefesh, he's not a life. And nitan la harugul atzilus mimo, you can kill him to save his mother. Why? Because he's not a person. He's not a life. That's why the Rambam says it's obvious. If the baby's not a baby yet, then you can kill him, in so to speak, quotations, in order to save the mother, who is a real person. So it seems, both the Rambam and Rashi, not the Rambam in his magnum opus, but at least in his commentary to the Mishnah, they take the view that baby is not a life before he comes into the world. If you'd stop here, you would say Rambam and Rashi both agree that a baby is not a life, so then it's not a life. So then perhaps there could be abortions of the various, certainly in order to save the mother's life. Why do we need such a high bar to save the mother's life? That sounds interesting. I'll have to look into that later. Now, we may recall that we're in the middle of a contradiction. On the one hand, the Gemara says that for a Gentile to kill a baby, it's a capital punishment. It's a capital crime. On the other hand, Talmud says that anything that's prohibited for a Gentile is prohibited for the Jew. So abortion should be prohibited for a Jew. It's a capital crime. But we see that under various circumstances, to save the mother's life and to avoid embarrassment, we perform abortions as Jews. So we have a contradiction. I thought Jews always have stricter rules than Gentiles. So Tosfot in Sanhedrin gives an answer. He deals with this question. He says, well, I have a question. We said that if a baby's born, you don't touch him. But before he comes out, the midwife can go in there and cut him up and take him out in order to save his mother. However, in the same scenario, it would be prohibited for a Gentile. And yet we say that anything that's forbidden for a Gentile is forbidden for a Jew. Tosfot gives two answers. It says, the first answer is, look, it's true that the Jew can't have any less restrictions than a Gentile, but if a Jew has a specific mitzvah in the case, he has to follow the mitzvah. So you would like to say that, a Jew can't do an abortion, but if you're saving the mother's life, the Jew has a mitzvah to save a life. Here he's makes a strange assumption that for a Gentile, there's no mitzvah to save lives. The Gentile has seven laws of Noah, and one of them is not saving people's lives. Don't kill anybody, but there's nothing about saving. Then Tosfot sort of rejects that and says, nah, you know what? Maybe that's not true. Yeah, sure, it's possible. I feel well, I'm sorry. It could be in this situation, since it's to save a mother's life. Even for a Gentile, it's permitted. So if a Jew was lobbying for the laws in Iceland, you would say, you know what? Iceland should do. The Icelanders should make an allowance for abortion, even for Gentiles, if it's going to save the mother's life. They have an obligation to save lives as well. Two opinions. Now, another answer is that we said that there's nothing forbidden for a Gentile that's permitted for a Jew. There is. It's not permitted. It's still forbidden for the Jew. Now, you could override the prohibition to save the mother's life, avoid embarrassment, but it's still prohibited. Why it's prohibited, we'll talk about later. Could you say that it's not prohibited? Is there an approach that would say that, no, there's no prohibition here at all? maybe it's only rabbinic prohibition. Yes, Tosfot in Nida 44a say as follows. He says, you know, let's say a mother dies. Mother dies, and God forbid, there's a baby inside. So he says, even if you want to say that you could still kill him, you say, he's the mother's dead anyways, and he's just part of the mother, so let him die. He says, well, then how come you're mechal Shabbos? There's a rule that you can violate Shabbos for a fetus. If you're afraid, we don't take this woman off the tree on Shabbos, then she's going to miscarry and the baby will be lost. So then we can violate Shabbos to save the fetus. So he says, wait a second. Violating Shabbos is a very serious thing. I violate Shabbos for a person, for a Jew, but this is just a fetus. If we say the fetus is just nothing, it's not a life, how can you violate Shabbos for it? And yet at the same time, I would say, if the mother died and the baby inside, forget, just leave. I don't get it. He says, he says, look, let's compare this to the end of life. What happens at the end of life? Someone's about to die. They're 99 years old. They're about to die. They're taking their last breath. See them taking their last breath. So you decide, I can't take it anymore. Let's just do it. Put an end to it. They put a pillow over his head. Finish. So you say, is that a murderer? Yeah, he's a murderer, but you're exempt. We can't execute you for that murder because he's about to die, but you're not allowed to do it anyway. Or he says, but still, could you violate Shabbos because that almost dead person needed something? Let's say the almost dead person want to wipe out his mouth to make him more comfortable. Want to get him some morphine so he won't be in pain. Yes, you could carry the morphine to save that person's life. So we see that when it comes to saving lives, even if it's not so viable, it's going to die in a minute. Or the baby, we don't know if he's going to live or die. We violate Shabbos even for things that are for entities that are unclear about their future. So, but the interesting thing here is that two times in this Tosfot, he says it's permitted to kill the baby in the womb. So Moshe defines, he says, doesn't mean permitted, it means exempt. But doesn't really say that. Okay, moving along. And Shach Chachma says, I'll tell you how a Gentile could be forbidden and a Jew could be permitted. He says, no, it's not permitted. Both a Jew and Gentile are forbidden, like Tosfot said somewhere else. Rather, they have different punishments. But there's no rule against that. The Gentile can have a more severe punishment, but they both have to be forbidden. Good. Now, if we stop here, we have Tosfot who says, it's just a prohibition. It's some kind of prohibition. It's not murder. It's some kind of prohibition. We have a Mishnah that says, maybe for the suffering of the mother, the embarrassment, you could do the abortion. We have the idea that to save a mother's life, do an abortion. We have a Tosfot that maybe says permitted, maybe it's a rabbinic violation. But what about the Rambam? What do I care? The Rambam, Maimonides? Because Maimonides, my Rambam is one of the most important authorities. Whatever he says goes. And 95% of the time, whatever he says goes. So we want to know what is the position of the Rambam. Before we do the Rambam, we need to know this Gemara. Gemara in Sanhedrin 72b says, one rabbi says, Avuna said, God forbid there's a child who's about to kill someone. You have to take out the child. You have to take him out. It's a very sad case. But of course, if you can avoid it, you certainly do. But if the scenario is, we either kill the child or the child will kill someone else. You have to get rid of that child. He is a pursuer. Even though, he's not really obligated. He doesn't know what he's doing. He's a 7-year-old. But can't let someone die, even for a child. It's a controversial question. So they say, wait, look at our Mishnah. We learned before that if the baby is born, you don't touch the baby. Even though the baby is ruining the mother's life, since the baby's already born, you have to see who wins. The baby survives, the mother survives. Whoever survives, you can't kill the baby to save the mother at that point once the baby comes out. So he says, why? The baby is trying to kill the mother. Just like if a little boy was chasing somebody with a gun, they have to take him down. So too, the baby is coming out is destroying his mother. The mother was a healthy woman. Well, now she's having a baby. She's having a problem. And if the scenario was that by killing the baby, you would save the mother, why don't you do that? He's a roadie. He's a pursuer. So the answer is, he's not a pursuer of his, in of himself. God set up the scenario where baby is born. When babies are born, sometimes mothers die. So once he's born, we view that as sort of a natural or a supernatural phenomenon that God decided there's a baby being born, and we have to leave it that way. We can't play God after the baby's born as to who's going to live or die. Good. That's what the Gemara says. So the Rambam does not follow the Gemara, really, if you think about it. Watch. He says, there's a special mitzvah, slotase. There's a special mitzvah prohibition in the Torah. Some of you may have been thinking, what? You can take down a four-year-old who's shooting at someone else? Poor four-year-old. No, you can't have mercy on a person who's pursuing others. And therefore, the rabbis taught that if a woman is having trouble giving birth, you're allowed to destroy the baby before it's born. Why? Because he's like a rodef. He's pursuing the mother. He's trying to kill the mother. But once he comes out, you can't take him because, after all, tivo shel, that's the nature of the world. Babies are born. Sometimes the baby, especially in those days, kill the mother. Sometimes it doesn't. You have to allow nature to take its course. But before it's born, baby is a pursuer. You got to kill the pursuer. Now, notice this does not follow the Gemara. Look at the contrast. The Talmud says before he comes out, you may kill him. Why? She says he's not a life. When the head comes out, after the head comes out, it's not a rodef. Therefore, you can't kill the newborn. He's not a pursuer. The Rambam flips it around. Before you come out, you know why you can kill him? Not because he's not a life, because he's not a person, but because he's a pursuer, a rodef. After he comes out, he's alive. So you have a contradiction here. Also, if you say that he's a rodef, that the baby is a rodef, so it's almost like you're giving him persona, like the baby is this person who's trying to kill someone, and he's decided, we kill him. That may indicate that Rambam thinks that the baby is a person. Also, why do you need such a high bar? When do I need to invoke the idea of a rodef? When it's prohibited, there's a nice four-year-old boy. He's misbehaving, but he doesn't know what he's doing. It's a four-year-old boy, and it's totally forbidden to murder him. But I say, but he's causing death. Something has to be done. So I need that really strong leniency to come into play so that I can take the life. If someone's coming at me with a gun, that gives me a right to kill him. But if indeed the baby is, well, why do I need such a high bar? If the baby's not a life, if the baby's not a person, then why should I need such a high bar that, you know why I can kill him? Because he's going to take my life. It should be a lower bar. I should say, look, mother doesn't feel well. She was raped and she's embarrassed. Baby, and she's traumatized by the rape, so it's not that she's going to die from it, but it's very traumatic. So that would be enough to kill the baby. Why do we need this big excuse that it's almost like the baby's trying to kill her? Why do we need that excuse? Apparently, as the Rambam holds, in general, killing the baby is forbidden. It's a type of murder. That's how the Rav Moshe Feinstein learns the Rambam. Then we have a difficult situation. If killing a baby is a form of murder, all right, but it's a low form of murder. So mother's life is in danger. You could abort the baby in order to save the mother's life. But short of that, just because the mother is having psychological problems, that would not be enough of a reason to have an abortion according to this Rambam, the way we're reading it. Now, some people want to say that the Rambam can be read very liberally. How's that? Yes, let's say everything we just said about the Rambam and the pursuer is true. It's considered murder. You know when that is? What's the case here? The case is she's about to give birth. when the mother's about to give birth, the baby is sort of on the way. When the baby's on the way, it's a person. But if you're at a previous stage of the pregnancy, baby's not a person. We don't need to invoke any rodev, and you could perform abortion for a variety of reasons. So Rambam could be read different ways. Rabbi Feinstein reads it very restrictively as far as abortion goes, and it could be read more liberal. Okay. Also, one may question the Rambam altogether. I mean, just because the Rambam, if it's against the Gemara, then, you know, what authority does he have? So, you know, the Rambam is the Rambam, but one might argue that this Rambam, it goes against the simple understanding of the Gemara. And in fact, the Rambam himself, in the commentary to the Mishnah, he just said it's a simple Mishnah. A complicated thing with the way the Rambam writes over here. It's very simple. Before he's born, he's not a person, so you can kill him. After he comes out, he is a person, so you can't kill him. It's very simple. Then we have a problem. How can a baby be a pursuer? He doesn't know what he's doing. Even the four-year-old doesn't know what he's doing, but certainly the infant doesn't know what he's doing. So what are we talking about? So we need a Gemara for this. This Gemara is brought both by the Evan Azel, Rabbi Mr. Zalman Pelter, Rabbi Amital's father, grandfather, also by Rabbi Asher Weiss. How gavadatim vasikam l'mavra? They were going on a boat. They were trying to cross the ferry. And this fellow, he jumps in. He brings a donkey onto this boat. The donkey is very heavy, and he's thrashing to and fro. And the boat is about to sink. So a fellow comes over who's not the owner of the donkey. Takes the donkey, throws him overboard. Everybody's saved. The rule is, if you use money of someone else to save yourself, you have to pay for it. So he knows, sure, if you want to save yourself by throwing my computer standing on top of my computer and smashing it to smithereens because you need to reach something, that's fine. I don't blame you, but you got to pay me for the computer. But so over here, you should pay for the donkey. So they came to Rav Ashi and he said, okay. Or they came to Rabbah. He said, come on. So he says, he doesn't have to pay anything. So Abaye says, what are you talking about? He used someone else's money to save his life. He should pay for it. He says, no. The minute that donkey got on the boat in that particular scenario, that donkey was pursuing everyone to kill them. Now, tell me, does the donkey know what he's doing? No. Donkey is a pawn of the person. So the donkey is an example of a rodef unintentional. He's not a volitional rodef. He's not pursuant, not a pursuer in a volitional sense. It's still a pursuer. How do you explain that? Why is he a pursuer? He's not a pursuer. So the Rav Chaim Brisker says, look, there's a general rule of saving a life in general. And that pertains in this case here. We're going to save that life. There's a specific life of saving the pursued, and the rodef has a specific kind of a law, and then there's a general idea of saving life. So in this case, I think we would say what that we would invoke the general principle of saving a life. It really has nothing to do with the specific type of thing where usually there's a pursuer. Maybe I'm not explaining it so well. Maybe I don't understand it so well. My son Tani explained it a little more simply that there's two issues with someone who's chasing someone to kill them. One thing is you want to save the pursuer, the pursued person. Number two, you want to punish the pursuer. He's a murderer, potential murderer. Now over here, the donkey's not has no volition. He's not guilty. The baby is not guilty. So you can't kill them on that basis. But there's a second type of rodef, a pursuer who is simply you're trying to save the pursued. Maybe that's what the Rambam calls just saving life in general. Or another way of looking at it from the Evan Azel or Asher Weiss, he says, look, they're saving a pursuer from a pursuer who is a guilty person. And then the saving from a pursuer is not conscious. He doesn't know what he's doing. That's also type of pursuer. So back we can explain the Rambam. Back to Rambam. What did the Rambam say? Rambam said that the baby, before it comes out, is a pursuer. So what kind of pursuer is he? His answer is He's a pursuer. He's not guilty. He's an active, passive pursuer. Pursuer in the sense we're simply trying to save. So Rav Asher Weiss applies this to what he says is one of the most modern, popular modern problems of abortion. There's not so many problems today, per se, of a mother dying and you have to save the mother by destroying the baby. It doesn't happen that much because usually you can do a C-section, it'll be fine. What happens a lot these days is that a woman is having a nice pregnancy. The baby's not pursuing anybody. Everybody's minding their own business. Everyone's doing great. There's only one problem. A woman is diagnosed, let's say at 6 months, she has a terrible aggressive cancer. And if she doesn't start her treatments right away, they may not be able to treat it properly. So you say, all right, let us start the treatments. Yeah, but the baby is going to be deformed by these chemo and radiation. So you don't want that to happen. So the mother says, all right, I'll wait till 3 months. I'll wait till 6 months, 3 months, 3 months later. Doctor says, crazy, you're going to lose your life. So the baby is not causing any problem over here. The baby is just being a baby, it's growing in its womb, there's no problem. The problem is that the woman is dying of cancer, she needs treatment. So indirectly, this baby is the reason she's not going to get a treatment. So therefore, we can Rasha Weiss decided that we could destroy the baby in order to make sure she get her treatment and save the mother's life, even though he's not actively doing anything. It's very indirect, like that donkey. It's indirect still. Saving the mother's life to destroy that baby. Now, the Rambam may be very restrictive. We're not sure how to read the Rambam, but it may be very restrictive. That's unless there's a rodeo situation, unless the baby's trying to kill the mother, can't do abortion. So if the mother is very distressed because of rape or anything, a child, teenage pregnancy, there's no excuse, only for rodeo, only for when babies about to destroy the mother's life, in a physical sense. However, we have the Maharid. Maharid, we need to know, well, is Maharid important? I mean, how can the Maharid disagree? We're talking about the Rambam, Tosfot. Who's the Maharid? Well, we had a lecture. You can look on the Memphis website. The Maharid and the Mabit were a father and son team. Mabit was a father. And he had a lot of credentials. He studied with a book with an author of the Seder Hayom. He was a son of the Mabit. He was the student of Rav Yosef Karo. He had opinions against Rav Yosef Karo regarding agricultural matters, the Shemitah sabbatical year, like we have this year. He was the head of the yeshiva in Sfat. He became chief rabbi in Constantinople. He was a teacher of the Knesset Hagdolah of Ben Venisti, very important halachic authority. He had many students. He wrote 3 volumes on the Talmud. He wrote about the Beit HaMikdash, the temple in Jerusalem. So he's a serious authority. And he takes a very clear stance. He says, the question is, he says, look, the baby is simply a extension of the mother. It's the baby is simply a part of the mother. It's part of her body. And Tosfos says, well, it's true that Jews don't get executed for killing a baby, but there are, it is, it's not permitted for a Jew to kill a baby. But what's the prohibition? So the Maharid takes a position in Chavolah. It's the rule of hitting someone. We know that if I punch you in the nose and you cause you to bleed, then that's considered Chavolah. Where does it say in the Torah not to cause wound? Well, it says you can only give 39 lashes to someone. Don't give him any more lashes because then he'll be destroyed right in front of you. So you can't give an additional lash, meaning you can't injure somebody. And the rabbis say you can't even injure yourself. So, now, is that a big prohibition? It's a prohibition. But let's say I had a reason. I wanted to injure myself. Like, let's say I think my nose is too big. And I'm trying to go on a date. I'm a woman. And I think I'm not beautiful. I have a self-esteem problem. So, truth is, beauty's not a beholder, and you don't need to feel that way. But let's say she just can't convince herself she needs to look better too. So Rav Moshe Feinstein said that she could have the elective surgery in order to look better. Oh, you have elective surgery you can do damage to yourself so you can feel better and look better and feel better yourself, help you psychologically. Oh, so there are circumstances under which sort of, you know, life and death circumstance where you could violate this prohibition. Oh, so that lower prohibition, that level of prohibition, you could perhaps do an abortion. It could override the problem of an injury. And he even quotes a story that he thinks the Rashba said, that the Ramban said, that there was, that he, Ramban was a doctor, Nachmanides was a doctor, not only Maimonides, but Nachmanides was also a doctor, and he was once helping a woman who was paid as a doctor to help a woman have children, and then he also had to perform an abortion, and he helped her, because a baby is not a life. And the Torah in our first source said that what? That if you destroy a baby, you have to pay money for it. It's just considered property. So we see from that first source, it's not a life at all. Now, so then if we look in general, what are the Jewish approaches to abortion? Well, Rav Moshe takes a strict approach. He says it's a form of murder. A form of murder that can be allowed in order to save a mother's life, or her life is more important, but it's still a form of murder. Mizrahi says, you know, there's no death penalty because maybe it won't live, but really it's a form of murder. Or if you look at the it's number D, Maram Shik, it's a chatzishir. Just like you're not supposed to eat half a piece of bread. You're not supposed to eat chametz or bread on Pesach. If you ate a little speck, a little quarter of a slice this big of bread, it's a half measure. Shouldn't eat half measures, but if you did, we can't punish you for it either. So similarly over here, it's like a half a life. However, Tosfot said it's simply forbidden. What does that mean? Maybe it's considered chavos yare, destruction of seed. We know that in general, take the approach, but we try not to spill the male seed. That after all, very holy and precious. And a man should not just for no reason spill seed. Certainly, the seed is now fertilized in the egg and it's already an embryo, so it's even more destruction of life. Certainly, you shouldn't destroy it. Zohar talks about a parable. Now, are there ever circumstances where one could spill seed? Well, there are. Let's say a man is so obsessed with other women and things like that, he wants to commit adultery. So he says, you know what? I'll just spill some seed and then I'll feel relieved and I won't have to do the sin. So there are circumstances where even this prohibition of spilling seed could be waived. We say also to, you know, this woman shouldn't have a nervous breakdown. We could also do this abortion, which is considered spilling of seed. Marit says it's just monetary damage. It's not very serious. It's just an injury. However, there are those who say it's a potential person, the Ran and Chulin. Maybe it's a potential person. Now, the Nota Behuda has an interesting debate with Rav Elchanan Wasserman. He says, I'll tell you why. We know that anything is forbidden for a Gentile, it's forbidden for a Jew. So if a Gentile can't do it because it's considered a person within a person, so for a Jew too, it's considered a person within a person. So Rav Elchanan Wasserman says, no. Don't confuse a reason with a rule. The reason that we don't know, why a Jew can't perform abortion. But the rule is that anything that a Gentile can't do, a Jew can't do it either. Might be for a different reason, but it's not necessarily the same reason. So for a Jew, is it considered a person in a person? We don't know. So what's the bottom line? Can a person do an abortion under what circumstances, under what point in the pregnancy? We must say that in the last generation, when I was younger, many of the main rabbis at that time were strict. But Moshe Feinstein, only basically for saving a life, Shlomo Zalman Urbach, major authority in Israel, although he had the unusual position that somebody really pressed him and said, look, but I need this abortion. He said, I'm not the only rabbi in the world. Go ask Rabbi Waldenberg. Maybe he'll talk to him. He happened to be lenient. Rabbi Salvechik, my teacher, he gave a public lecture and says, how can he go against the Rambam? His interpretation of the Rambam. As we said, there are other interpretations, but his interpretation of the Rambam, how can he go against? However, most poskim authorities today follow the Maharit and are lenient. So you have Moshe Weiss, major rabbis at Yeshiva University, the Rav Moshe Weiss makes a very interesting argument. He says, look, you've got Rashi says it's not a life, and that one liner in the Rambam says the Mishnah is obvious. Why is it obvious? Because it's not a life. So you have the Rambam in his early days plus Rashi against the Rambam in his later days. in his magnum opus. So maybe that counts together. It's an unusual argument. So Rav Asher Weiss points out, you know, we have this tremendous contradiction here. On the one hand, we save, we'll violate Shabbos in order to save a fetus. On the other hand, sometimes we could destroy a fetus. So the Jewish law straddles between these two poles. It's complex. The Rabbi Jeremy Weider has an excellent lecture on this. We're welcome to listen to what he has to say about it. He would argue that it's a complex issue. It's not for the government to get involved. That's his argument. Certainly, in states where they're very restrictive, it might be a situation where the Jewish law says, save the mother, and the government says, don't save the mother, and the Jewish doctor would be in a terrible quandary, and the patient terrible quandary as to whether to follow the state or to follow the law. So that's a very, very disturbing phenomenon. And some have argued that, you know, the majority is served best by a more liberal position so that everyone can follow their own conscience on this very complex issue. Now, when we say it might be permitted because, let's say, we take the Maritz position that it's only chabal, it's only causing injury, you could injure yourself for you know, rather minor reasons, psychological reasons, etc. But when would you be able to do it? So Rabbi Soloveitchik thought, look, for 40 days, it's just an injury. The Rambam in the Laws of Trumos, chapter 8, law number 3, says explicitly that's Maya Balma. It's based on a Gemara in Yevamos, Psalm of Testament base, that until 40 days, it's just water. Now, this may not be a factual point, but it looks like water. It doesn't look like much. So we consider that before 40 days, he says we can follow the Maharid. It's just an injury. But after 40 days, Rav Soloveitchik thought it was murder. However, Rav Shechter quotes the Torah's Chesed. Torah's Chesed were Rav Schneer Zalman Freudkin in the 19th century. And he says, look, when you get to the birth and the baby's being born, so then you shouldn't do an abortion. But before that, you could do an abortion anytime before the birth. Some say maybe until the 9th month, because the 9th month is already a full baby, shouldn't do it. But before that, it's okay. However, the Tzitz Eliezer says no, 3 months, and Rabbi Yosef, I think, says 3 months. Shlomo Zalman Urbach, again, took the position that you don't have to follow me, you can follow someone else. And finally, are psychological concerns considered a true danger? So we had a Rabbi Yosef Engel on the last page of Yevamos. He said, you know, sadness is a very serious thing. Sadness could lead to illness, suicide, early death, psychosomatic illness. So we take sadness very seriously. So if a person is psychologically adversely affected by the birth of the baby and needs to have an abortion, there is a basis for it. Now, these are the general principles. So there are lenient. There is a lenient school based on the Maharid, who is a major authority. The Radvaz also agrees with Maharid. And then we have a more restrictive position of many authorities in the 20th century and based largely on the Rambam. The exact bottom line for each person should be determined by their own rabbi and their own conscience. We, as we ponder the laws in various states in America and the new status of abortion in America, you should just remember that according to some rabbis, in a more lenient position, there's still a more restrictive position that some would have, which would be consonance with some of the more restrictive states. But there certainly could be states in which there would be a conflict between Jewish law, general law, and this is something of concern. While certainly we appreciate the idea that abortion should not be simply a form of birth control, we take this very seriously. Even at the lowest level, it's a spilling of seed. It's making some sort of chavala, some sort of injury. It's something. So we do take this seriously. Even the Rabbi Elazar Waldenberg, Tzitz Eliezer, who said that, you know, he permitted up to 3 months, he permitted even for psychological reasons, even according to him, he does mention that, you know, look, we have to be very careful. Murder is a very serious thing. Even something sort of akin to murder, you have to be very serious about it. That's why Gentiles, Torah was so strict about it. We want to make sure that the world cares about life, and we should certainly do that as well. However, when there are such circumstances, certainly rabbis to rely on, and it's always a good idea to consult major authority who's qualified to decide matters of life and death, speak to them, and get their counsel and their guidance. Rest assured, the halacha has tremendous flexibility and tremendous sensitivity to the human condition and various problems. We hope we should be spared any of these types of problems, and our children should all be born healthy and strong, and no conflict between the mother and the child, their health, and God willing, Rav Shalom Banayach, all of our children should be peaceful. Thank you so much for joining us here at the Anshei Sefarad Beth Lomond congregation for our discussion of abortion. Join us each week for a discussion of the holidays and the parsha. And again, welcome to make comments, but please be respectful. Thank you.